They left the great granite plain and flew over a garden even more beautiful than anything in a dream. In it were gathered many creatures, like the one Mrs. Watchet had become, some lying among the flowers, some swimming in a broad crystal river that flowed through the garden, some flying in what Meg was sure must be a kind of dance, moving in and out above the trees. They were making music, music that came not only from their throats, but from the movement of their great wings as well. "What are they singing?" Meg asked excitedly. Mrs. Watson shook her beautiful head. "It won't go into your words. I can't possibly transfer it to your words. Are you getting any of it, Charles?" Charles Wallace sat very still on the broad back, on his face an intently listening look, the look he had when he delved into Meg or his mother. "A little, just a very little, but I think I could get more in time." "Yes, you could learn it, Charles, but there isn't time. We can only stay here long enough to rest up and make a few preparations." Meg hardly listened to her. "I want to know what they're saying. I want to know what it means." "Try, Charles," Mrs. Watson urged. "Try to translate. You can let yourself go now. You don't have to hold back."
"But I can't," Charles Wallace cried in an anguished voice. "I don't know enough, not yet."
"Then try to work with me, and I'll see if I can't verbalize it a little for them." Charles Wallace got his look of probing, of listening. "I know that look," Meg thought suddenly. "Now I think I know what it means, because I've had it myself sometimes doing math with Father when a problem is just about to come clear." Mrs. Watson seemed to be listening to Charles's thoughts. "Well, yes, that's an idea. I can try." "Too bad you don't really know it so you can give it to me direct, Charles. It's so much more work this way."
"Don't be lazy," Charles said.
Mrs. Watson did not take offense. She explained.
"Oh, it's my favorite kind of work, Charles. That's why they chose me to go along, even though I'm so much younger. It's my one real talent. But it takes a tremendous amount of energy, and we're going to need every ounce of energy for what's ahead of us. But I'll try. For Calvin and Meg, I'll try."
She was silent. The great wings almost stopped moving. Only a delicate stirring seemed to keep them aloft. "Listen then," Mrs. Watson said. The resonant voice rose, and the words seemed to be all around them, so that Meg felt that she could almost reach out and touch them. "Sing unto the Lord a new song, and his praise from the end of the earth. Ye that go down to the sea, and all that is therein, the isles and the inhabitants thereof. Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift their voice. Let the inhabitants of the rocks sing. Let them shout from the top of the mountains. Let them give glory unto the Lord."
Throughout her entire body, Meg felt a pulse of joy such as she had never known before. Calvin's hand reached out. He did not clasp her hand in his. He moved his fingers so that they were barely touching hers. But joy flowed through them, back and forth, between them, around them, and about them, and inside them. When Mrs. Watson sighed, it seemed completely incomprehensible that through this bliss could come the faintest whisper of doubt.
"We must go now, children." Mrs. Watson's voice was deep with sadness, and Meg could not understand. Raising her head, Mrs. Watson gave a call that seemed to be a command, and one of the creatures, flying above the trees nearest them, raised its head to listen, and then flew off and picked three flowers from a tree growing near the river and brought them over. "Each of you take one," Mrs. Watson said. "I'll tell you how to use them later."